In his latest novel, Fall of Frost, Brian Hall uses the facts of the life of Robert Frost to imagine the great poet's inner thoughts. Mr. Hall is the author of three previous novels, including the highly acclaimed I Should Be Extremely Happy in Your Company, which told the story of Lewis and Clark. This novel is published by Viking, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Brian Hall back to the show today. It's a pleasure to see you again.
Yes, it's a pleasure to be here.
Did your research for this book proceed in the same way that you would have if you were writing a biography?
As far as the research goes, absolutely. I wanted in this book to, like in the Lewis and Clark book, not depart from factual material, external facts at all. And with this one, even more than Lewis and Clark, the record is so extensive. There aren't that many huge gaps to fill in. It allows me to work with much more detailed material.
And I'm sure everybody asks the same question, then why not just write a biography?
Because, there already are biographies of him.
Yeah, but you have insights that those other biographers don't have, I assume.
Right. Two things. A biography would, the form of biography tends to push you in the direction of first covering the life in a fairly chronological way. I guess you wouldn't absolutely have to, but it's what people would expect from biography. He had such a long life that if you tell the whole life, especially for a writer, I think you get a little bit lost in the public persona. And so much of what goes on that's important for a writer is instead these private, internal, crucial elements. And as a novelist, you can kind of focus on the private side.
Did you know exactly what parts of Frost's life you wanted to focus on before you started writing, or did you construct your story based on what you discovered along the way?
The story about him going to Russia.
Which is the way you begin the novel.
Yes, and that was the original idea. It was the first kernel of a thought that this might be a book I wanted to write. I hadn't realized that Frost had ever been to Russia, and I ran across the anecdote 4 or 5 years ago. And just the thought of Frost and Khrushchev being in the same room at the same time, trying to talk to each other, really just dramatically fascinated me. So that became still very much a unifying thread of the book. Then,
That something that the Kennedy administration had arranged, that meeting?
It came about a little bit fortuitously and accidentally, and for Frost, kind of alarmingly accidentally. He met the new Soviet ambassador, Anatoly Dobrynin, in Washington in May of 1962, and he had a conversation. He had been the consultant to the Library of Congress, the position that's now called Poet Laureate. Mm-hmm. And Frost was in Washington. He met Dobrynin, and they had a conversation. Frost had always loved to talk politics and was a very canny conversationalist. He and Dobrynin really hit it off because Dobrynin, much more than the previous Soviet ambassadors, not only spoke fluent English, but was actually kind of a funny and charming guy. And Frost liked him personally. And for Frost, that was hugely important when he met someone. And so Stuart Udall was also there. And Udall and Dobrynin together sort of conceived of the idea that Frost could go to Russia as a goodwill ambassador because he'd been airing some opinions at this party about the Berlin crisis. Frost was kind of alarmed when they came up with this idea. He didn't really like to travel much.
But he was getting old and frail. This is not long before he died.
Exactly. He actually went in September of 1962, and he died in January 63. He already had what was thought of as prostatitis. It turned out to be cancer of the bladder, and that's what killed him. The stay in the hospital later killed him. And so from the moment this idea was hatched, Frost personally wanted immediately to go so that he could talk to Khrushchev. It was kind of this idée fixe. But the planners of his trip didn't really have that in mind. The idea was it was just going to be a cultural thing. He was going to, put flowers on Tolstoy's grave. And Frost kept saying over and over again, no, I'm not interested in that. I want to see the great man.
How much does knowing the details of his life give us an understanding of his poetry?
I think it's again, in a straightforward biography, I think it's easy to forget, even if the biography mentions the personal tragedies and the family life, which of course the biographies do, it's easy to not realize how crucial they were to the way he looked at the world. His own childhood was unhappy. He had an alcoholic father who was physically abusive, who died when he was 11. The family was very poor.
In San Francisco.
We
always think of him as a New Englander, and there he is spending his childhood in San Francisco.
And in a way, as is often the case, precisely because he wasn't born in New England, it allowed him to adopt in a more sort of convincing and self-conscious way the New England persona, because he could come from it from outside. He was more attuned to the New England dialect because he first met it when he was 11 years old. And he was fascinated by it, by the way the Yankee farmers spoke.
So his mother moved after his father died?
Because his father's family had been old New Englanders, but his own father had more or less fled his family to try to make a fortune for himself as a journalist in San Francisco.
Now, you have broken this novel into 130 tiny chapters, only a page long. And I thought, well, that's because those are the lengths of poems.
That I'm very glad you noticed that. That's exactly one of the main points that I'm doing here is that,
because you want to show us that kind of connection, and a novelist can do that because you can also give him thoughts that he may or may not have had, but which you think he probably did have.
Yeah, the short chapters is exactly as you say. I'm a prose writer. I've never written poetry, but this book is so much about poetry and about the feeling of poetry and a man who thinks in lyric terms that these short chapters allow me to do that. The broken chronology also allows me for readers to approach each chapter somewhat in isolation from the others, as though each is a poem. And then to suggest in ways that I think are plausible. You know, there's no question that, of course, I'm speculating all the time about what he's thinking, but my goal throughout is to approach it knowing enough about him and about the facts that my guesses at least are reasonable guesses, even if some are right and some are wrong.
My guest is Brian Hall, whose latest novel, his fourth, is called Fall of Frost. It is published by Viking. And why Fall of Frost?
Partly the trip to Russia takes place in the fall. Mm-hmm. It's one of the ironies of the trip to Russia is that he goes in September of 62. Frost thinks that the paramount issue is the Berlin crisis. But of course, in October of 62, the Cuban Missile Crisis breaks.
Is he thinking of going and doing a diplomatic mission?
He is. He had always flirted with the idea of being, he used to joke about being a senator, running for the Senate. I think he was attracted to the Shelleyan idea that poets are the unacknowledged legislators of the world. And in a way, he thought it would be fun to be an acknowledged legislator. He never was serious about really being in the Senate, but he was attracted to the idea of engaging in politics. And he was worried. He felt ever since the Kennedy inauguration that he'd been given a public role that he felt he had a duty to try to live up to. And he talked about this in his letters. And so the Berlin crisis seemed to be, to him at the time, of paramount importance. And he'd become attracted to Khrushchev as a man ever since the trip in 1959 when Khrushchev came to the United States. There's something very similar and quite fascinating about how Khrushchev and Frost tend to talk in public and how they think.
Do you think that Frost felt trapped by his success as a poet? That perhaps if he hadn't had such early success that he might very well have moved into other areas?
I think he certainly was delighted to be famous and always seemed to hope to be more famous. And yet, I think it's true for him, as it's true for almost everybody, with maybe some very rare exceptions, that burden is a huge fame is a huge burden. It was a burden on him, and it was a terrible burden on his family. And he recognized those burdens.
And he had a troubled family.
He did. His children grew up in this shadow that was very difficult to deal with.
A couple of deaths, mental illness.
Right. There was the family, his own family had a strain of mental illness. His sister had been institutionalized and one of his children was. His son committed suicide. Frost was very involved with his children. He was a very good and attentive parent, but he was a very, very famous parent who left this big shadow that the children kind of wilted under.
You speculate that Frost perhaps learned to replace the love of his children, whom death could touch, with the love of words. Did you get that out of one of the poems?
No, but I did get it out of the sense that his, in my opinion, some of his greatest poetic periods of sort of deepest, profoundest poetic production came after the deaths of family members. When Eliot, his first child, a boy, died at the age of 3.5, that once Frost survived that, and it was very difficult for both him and his wife, Eleanor, to get through that period, he then entered this great creative period at the dairy farm. Later, the death of Marjorie, one of his daughters who died in childbirth, also ushered in a new period of creative brilliance.
Most general readers think of Robert Frost's poetry as pleasantly optimistic about idyllic life in the American countryside, et cetera, et cetera. Is that an accurate reading on any level?
The thing that I love about Frost's poetry is that that is true enough on one level. And the thing that's so fascinating about his poetry is that unlike a lot of the modernist poetry, you can read it fairly inattentively as having one level, whereas in fact it's not even that he has two or three levels. It's that in a way it doesn't even make sense to talk about levels in his poetry. His ability to maintain an ambiguous stance at almost every moment of his poems is just, I think, thrilling and wonderful.
Why did he blame himself for his son's death?
Well, partly, I think, any parent feels responsible for almost anything that becomes of their children. I also think that he did realize that his fame was a burden for the children. Carol, the son, wanted to be a poet and wrote poetry. His poetry is not particularly good, and Frost was aware that it wasn't particularly good, but in his letters to Carol, he's always trying to praise the poetry. He's trying very, very hard to sort of buck up Carol. Carol also had a strain of the mental illness is not quite the right word, but the mental sensitivity that was a problem.
And he didn't get the best doctor that he could have in time. When his son was sick.
Oh, right. And that's right. And that's for Eliot. You may have actually meant Eliot the first time around, in which case I apologize. Eliot, the first one who died at 3.5, there was a bit of a delay. Again, not culpable to an outsider, but to a parent, most parents would feel that it was culpable, is there was a doctor who was more of a homeopathic type, who was his mother's doctor. Frost's mother's doctor, who came first and then misprescribed, misdiagnosed, and then when the regular doctor came about 3 days later, it was too late.
Do you have any thoughts about what the road less traveled, Frost's most famous poetic line, meant for him?
Yes, there's and I include a couple of chapters in the middle of the book that are all about that poem. He always said it had to do with Edward Thomas, this British poet, that it was a good friend of his who died in World War One.
Well, people probably don't know this, he lived in England and Scotland.
For 3 years, yeah, in England, first outside London and then in Gloucestershire. And his first two books were published in England. And he first achieved any kind of recognition in England, and then the American editors really only paid attention to him once the English literary establishment had sort of given him the imprimatur.
So the road less traveled, it seemed to me that he was a man full of regrets.
Yes, and I think one of the road less traveled to me is one of the most fascinating poems because it's taken so often as a straightforward homily about, oh, you know, take the less traveled road and that'll make all the difference. And you hear people quote it probably more than any other poem. And the poem is a much more ambiguous and really kind of an odd poem. My personal reading of it is that Frost was trying to put so much feeling in it about the fact that he left England, the fact that Edward Thomas stayed and died in the war, his feelings about his own inability to both somehow be a soldier and be a poet, that the poem in a really kind of interestingly deep way is a kind of obscure poem. And that's what I find so fascinating about it.
Brian Hall's latest novel is called Fall of Frost. I don't want to put a "the" there. It is published by Viking, and I thank you for being with us again.
I thank you for having me.